pad up. It's the Australian Cricket Podcast. And here are your hosts.
Macca, stop dancing, buddy. Welcome to the Australian Cricket Podcast. This is the third year anniversary special. Yes, that's right. 3 years ago this week, Macca and I kicked this podcast off with a short episode about the upcoming fifth test in the Oval in the Ashes in 2013. We're still going 3 years later. So it's appropriate then that on this show I would have Macca back, and I've got his introduction here, which he wrote for himself on his Twitter bio. He's written he's an ace sports writer for the Australian Associated Press and panelist on the Australian Cricket Podcast. Welcome to the show, Macca.
Hey, thank you, Madison. Can you believe it's been 3 years? How fantastic. I've loved every minute of it, and I'm celebrating with a very strong cup of tea.
Yeah, welcome back. It's been 148 shows. I think we've done a fair few together. So, I mean, I think we'll keep it going, keep it strong.
We've rolled on. We've got some great panellists on the show.
Someone made the comment we've been more consistent than the Australian cricket team in the last 3 years. So we haven't had to play on spinning tracks, though. And the other panellist today is one of the newer members of the show, and his introduction from his own Twitter bio is, "Everything cricket, I bat like Jason Gillespie, minus his solid defence." Now, Paul, before we get going, if you don't have his solid defence, what do you have?
No, nothing. I was a very boring batsman who got out very quickly.
There we go. Welcome to the show. We had your friend from the Bat and Ball with Pat and Paul. We had Pat on last week, and he threw me a Shakespeare quote after his introduction, and it was like facing a Shane Warne googly. I had no idea what was coming. I was completely flummoxed, so I'm glad we've got you back just to bring things down a notch. Well, he's far too erudite for this show.
What I liked was when he said the quote, and then he said, "Hamlet," and then, comma, "William Shakespeare," just to identify who wrote Hamlet.
Anyway, it's a big show today. We're going to look at the first one day. We're going to critique some commentators. We've got to chat about the test series. I know Macca and Paul have got a few things that they've got to get off their chest. And then we're going to move on to our new favourite game, which is the sledging quiz. And we've also got a bit of listener mail to round this show off. We've had some great emails this week. But let's start off with the first one day against Sri Lanka yesterday. Australia actually won a game in the subcontinent. Well done, boys.
Congratulations, Australia. Huh? One from 400.
So Australia won the first one day by 3 wickets. It was an interesting team selection. Mitch Marsh has already gone home before the game, which I found strange because I would have thought Mitch Marsh is precisely the sort of player you want to keep in the subcontinent to get experience in those conditions. What do you guys think?
Yeah, it is a little bit strange, although who knows what the vagaries of Rod Marsh's thinking. But is that all it is, Macca? Is there anything else to it, do you think?
Mate, I can't help but think there's got to be something else to it, whether he's got, you know, a personal problem. I know he's had a few issues with ill discipline. I'm not saying it's that, but it does seem a bit odd when he could really come into his own in the ODI series.
Well, they put forth the reason that it's a good chance for him to have a rest ahead of the South African one days and then the big Australian summer. But I just, as I said before, I mean, Mitch Marsh, you would think, will go to India next year. Why wouldn't you keep him here and maybe not send him to South African? It just doesn't make sense to me.
Does he need a rest now?
He didn't bowl that much in the test series.
And it hasn't been the longest tour. I don't know. Yeah, like Paul said, it's either a result of some very more strange thinking from our selection panel, or maybe there's a little bit else happening behind the scenes.
But you're right, Manners, as well, that if you're going to have a rest in South Africa. That if
Which
he's
is
going
a
to
meaningless
go to India.
Series.
Yeah, and this is a meaningless series as well, but it gets him experience for if he's going to be in India, conditions that are at least similar.
Now, the playing 11 for Australia yesterday was a strange one, or the Sunday game. Some of you might be listening to it later in the week. Usman Khawaja was left out, obviously, after some really poor form in the test stuff. They left him out, and Nathan Lyon was left out. Moses Enriques came in. Travis Head came into the middle order. They played Adam Zampa. And this pitch was universally criticised by both captains after the game. It was an absolute dust bowl. I mean, you bowl a ball and they were going through the top in the second over. So I think we're going to see, as this one-day series goes on, the ball's just going to keep turning.
And you can complain about it all you like, but it's the fact of life and it's going to happen to Australia in February in India. So now's the time to get good at it. I wouldn't be dropping Nathan Lyon because I think there's a question mark as to whether he should go to India, but give him every chance now. Play him every game to see if he can finally learn to bowl on these types of pitches.
Guys, I've got a theory I want to run past you about Usman Khawaja. I think that purple patch, that could be it. That could be that he had last summer. That could be it for him. That could be
totally
the real highlight
agree.
Of his career.
I totally agree. Since then, he's just fallen off a cliff.
You think like Graham Yallop, 83, 84.
Yeah, and he's just, I don't know if he can keep it up.
Yeah, it's really disappointing because he was an absolute world beater 6 months ago and he's floundering now. So he's been left out. Australia sent in Sri Lanka, which was a controversial decision because it meant Australia had to chase a base. Sri Lanka didn't pick a specialist fast bowler, so we had to chase against effectively six spinners. But Steve Smith cited the dew later on as being the reason for Australia bowling first and then having to face the Sri Lankan spinners when it was hard to grip the ball. But it did backfire because the wicket was turning more and more as the day went on, and it was a really tough chase for Australia. And I don't think the dew affected the Sri Lankan spinners that much. As a matter of fact, analysing the way the game went, Australia chased down 227 with three wickets in hand. But if they'd lost to Smith early, and judging by what happened towards the end of the innings, it could have radically backfired and we had another major collapse.
Oh, I don't want to criticise him. I think that we won the game. It's the first win we've had of significant of in a proper match on the tour. I think that you've got to say that in this case, the results justify the decision.
I agree that the results worked out well, but I mean, it was a tough chase for the Australians. I think maybe in these conditions, we're better off just setting a target and trying to defend it and put the pressure back on the Sri Lankan batsmen.
I guess at least it shows that Smith is thinking very deeply about what he's doing, don't you think?
Yeah.
Well, you bloody hope so. He's the Australian captain.
Well, of course, but you know, he's looking at every possible way to gain an advantage on what's been a very difficult tour. I know you can say, of course he's doing it, but he's looking
at every... Is it being too smart, though? Is it being a bit too funky?
Well, like Paul said, it worked on this instance, although if he was caught at first slip early on his innings, we'd probably go down, don't we? But it's worked, so... you don't do it all the time, but there you go.
Now, the star of this one-day game was Mitchell Starc. He took 3 for 32. He did not concede a boundary, but he's the one shining light in Australian cricket at the moment. He has notched a world record. He's the fastest ever bowler to 100 one-day international wickets, beating Saqlain Mushtaq, who got there and won fewer games, 53 games. Took Mitchell Starc only 52 games. His strike rate is also the best ever to 100 wickets, 24.6 balls per wicket. An amazing world record, just unstoppable now.
Man, it's an incredible effort from...
I mean, where does this sit on the rank of records?
Well, man, I think it's right up there. I mean, if you look back at Starc, you know, he's always... early on in his career, he really struggled at accuracy, of course. He got lambasted by Warnie. And I think his career could have gone either of two ways. He could have really sort of faded out. But he's obviously got a great self-belief there. He's got a great lot of talent. And he's stuck to it. I mean, you look at... He's had to carry a lot on his own shoulders with little support. And he's just grown and grown, hasn't he?
Absolutely, and this could be the moment, this tour, a bit like Glenn McGrath in the West Indies in 95, where he then went on to become the best fast bowler of Australia of his generation and almost any generation. Mitchell Starc could be in for the next 4 or 5 years as being the leading fast bowler in the world in all forms of cricket. At the moment, in one-day cricket, if you had to pick one player in your World 11, the first player picked, you make a strong case that you'd pick Mitchell Starc before anyone else on the planet in any form.
I think the other thing is, you know, Mitchell Johnson retired. Obviously, there could have been a big gap there, but Starc's just stepped up to it. And I guess, like you say, Paul, the other thing is, if you wanted to name a bowler you'd least want to face at this moment in time in world cricket, one days or Test cricket, it'd be Mitchell Starc, wouldn't it?
Sure.
And he's got the ability to move the ball both ways now, which he didn't have early in his career. He used to be able to push it across and sometimes swing the white ball back, but now he's doing it consistently. But the big difference for me this year has been his ability to take his one-day form into the Test arena. There was always a gap before this season that he was a dangerous one-day bowler. Even you go back to last year's Cricket World Cup, but there was a gap between that and his Test performances. Now he's just pushed through that gap, and it's amazing stuff.
There were periods in the Test series where it was a surprise when he'd go through an over without taking a wicket. That's how dominant he looked.
I mean, should they just give him a wicket in the first over when he bowls just to save the trouble? Just you start off one for and start at the second over?
Put a stooge at the top of the order, yeah.
We could do the same with Harath. Just give him eight wickets for the Test match. And
The other big story from the Australian bowling effort was James Faulkner bounced back after being dropped for the tri-series final in the West Indies. He took 4 for 38 and was man of the match. And those performances, Starc and Faulkner, were the main ones in restricting Sri Lanka to 8 for 227. And then when we came out to bat under lights. Aaron Finch got us off to a flyer, 56 off 46. And he's one batsman that does seem to suit tracks that keep low, because his technique doesn't actually cope with the bouncing ball that well against good quick bowling. But on these decks, it seems to suit his technique.
There are a few players from this game that could be in line for a trip to India. Finch is one. I think Faulkner is another that had we had him in the Test series instead of, say, Moses Henriques or Mitchell Marsh, his bowling could have suited those conditions and his batting couldn't have done any worse. George Bailey's another one who potentially could come into calculation for a return to Test cricket in the series in India for horses for corkers.
Matty Wade came out and made 26 off 34 batting at four when Finch got out. He supported Steve Smith, who made a crucial and gutsy 58 off 92 balls. And I think we saw there Smith realising that on this track you had to just be a bit more patient than you would in a normal game, and it was actually his slowest ever half century in one day international cricket. So he was supported by Wade, who literally swept almost every ball. They showed a graph of his runs off spinners and they were 100% square leg or behind square leg on the onside. So take him to India next year. He's more than comfortable sweeping from the first ball.
Well, Nathan Lyon maybe should be our batting coach, because he's the one that does that. He just sweeps every single ball.
It took 10 minutes into our three-year anniversary special for Paul to throw up a crazy idea.
There's a hashtag humour on that. It was meant to be tongue-in-cheek, Menace. But
Maxi is batting coach.
But you know the ball's not going to bounce. It's not the worst tactic in the world, is it?
And then George Bailey came out and he made 39 off 54. And Australia were pretty comfortable in the chase. It was really hard work, though. I think that's what we saw in this one-day game, was the fact that maybe in a Test series we didn't work hard enough, because it was tough work. They just sort of snuck over the line in the end. They had a lot of balls to spare, but, you know, Australia could have been bowled out in this chase quite easily. But a great wicket, man of the match, James Faulkner. Now, I think going forward, Sri Lanka have shown that they're just going to prepare these absolute rank turners for the rest of this one-day series. Can Australia continue this form in the one-days and maybe win this series, guys?
I think there's every reason we can, isn't there? I mean, they're obviously still hurting after the Test loss. They can salvage something from this one-day series.
And we're always going to do better in one-days in the subcontinent than in Tests in our current form, because you don't have the choice to sit on the splice and prod and poke and get out. You're kind of obligated to get on with the job, and sometimes that can help.
Well, there's one more game in Colombo, and then the Aussies move on to Dambulla for two more games and conclude this one-day series in Palakkelee. So we'll be watching that closely. Now let's move on to one of my favourite segments. Macro, I know this is one of your favourite segments. It's the commentator critique. And look, I'm really excited about today's, because I turned on the Australia A coverage yesterday and our very own panellist, Gav Joshi, was commentating on the match. And I thought, well, he's a commentator now. We can put him in there as a commentating critique. So I'm going to start this one off. Gav was actually a very good commentator, I've got to say. He's a lot more on his best behaviour, though, when he's in the cricket.com.au commentary box. He didn't have a go at Alan Donald. He was very, very measured in his approach. So I think, well done, Gav. Big leap from the podcast to commentary.
Good
well
on
done.
Him. He's obviously towing the party line there, is he, Menes?
Certainly is towing the party line.
No, great work, Gav.
On you, Gav.
Now let's move on to some more well-known commentators. And I think, I'm going to say it right now, this is probably the worst T20 commentator I've ever heard. The one and only Indian puppet, Ravi Shastri.
I don't think he's the one and only one. I think you've got to put Gavaskar in there as well, at least, don't you?
The one of many.
Well, isn't Ravi Shastri the chief puppet for the BCCI in the commentary box?
Sad thing is that if you took all that away, I think he'd be a reasonably good commentator. I know a lot of Indians don't like him because they hear him all the time and maybe they get a little bit sick of him. I think he's actually quite knowledgeable about the game. But Menes, I agree with you. I find him hard to listen to just because of the fact that he's just he's there as a mouthpiece for the BCCI and you lose some respect for him.
I mean, I also find that a lot of his enthusiasm seems counterfeit to me. It seems just that it's fake, that he's just drumming it up. It's not really genuine
at the
start of the game.
It's definitely fake. He's told to drum it up by the BCCI.
Some people can act and some people can't. He obviously can't.
I remember a few years ago when Australia were over there and there was a good Test series, and he said this sets things up nicely for the IPL, and that really irritated a lot of people. That
Well, I guess the thing is, Paul, you talk about how Indians get sick of him. I mean, they could have such a breadth of commentary, couldn't they, across, and Shastri's just been across everything for so long, and no wonder they get sick of him.
Now, to one of the great West Australian fast bowler, who more commentates on the ABC grandstand coverage, radio coverage during the summer here, Terry Alderman. Now, I know English listeners will be having nightmares about his swing bowling, but I actually think Terry Alderman's a really good commentator, very listenable. He doesn't get out there that much, so he's a little bit of a novelty value, but yeah, I'm going to give Terry Alderman a big tick.
I really like him too, man. I really enjoy listening to him, and you don't often get the chance to listen to him. He obviously knows a lot about the whacker, about WA conditions. I really enjoy listening to him.
Yeah, me too. I mean, he's someone that if he's ever commentating, you can feel comfortable that you're going to get decent commentary coming out of him. The only criticism of him, and it's not his fault at all, but Fox Sports in recent weeks, whenever there's been a lunch break or a break in play, have played the interview that Robert Craddock did with him at least 100 times, and he started to wear a bit thin. Just suddenly the cricket disappears, and there he is, there he is, there he is, there he is again. But other than that, he's very good.
Yeah, I'm starting to know those cricket legends word for word now, because they're replayed.
It's a good show. It's a good show.
No, it's a very good show, even like 10 times. Before we move on, I don't know if you listened to the last show, but we had Kerry O'Keefe here, and he copped a hammering from Patrick. Patrick said he was actually happy when Kerry O'Keefe retired. So there's been some gasps around the cricket world after that comment. Where do you guys sit on Kerry O'Keefe? I'm just throwing a googly at you.
I like Kerry O'Keefe. I must admit, when he first began way back in sort of the early 90s, didn't really like him. But then there's that Optus show, At the Wicket, that had him and Gavin Robertson and Terry Kennedy, and I used to watch that, and it was very funny, Kerry O'Keefe and his signature laugh. I
think that annoyed Pat. He didn't like it. He's like one of the only Australian cricket fans that didn't like Kerry O'Keefe.
I think he balanced it well.
He's not Australian then.
I think he balanced it well, Kerry O'Keefe, that he knew when to be serious and knew when to have a laugh, and I think that his presence in the ABC commentary box is missed.
I think he really sort of pioneered or led forward the great era of ABC radio commentary, didn't he? I mean, they don't, a lot of the, you know, the things that he would talk about, he kept it so entertaining and engaging, and I think they do lack a bit of that now, the ABC.
He brought some colour to the
box,
didn't he?
Yeah, he did. I thought he was fantastic. I can't believe that anyone sort of didn't like his commentary, but we're all entitled to our own opinion.
We're looking at you, Pat. Now, let's move on now to another one. Greg Matthews. Now, this Greg Matthews, Mo Matthews, he commentates on the commercial networks in Australia on the radio, and I think he's one of the funkiest commentators going around.
So does he.
I'd like to see Greg Matthews in at the BBL commentating with Gilly and Flemmo and Ponting. I think he'd add a bit of 80s magic and just jive things up a bit. What do you guys think about Greg Matthews?
But I do like Mo, and I when I listen to that the commercial coverage of the BBL, I do enjoy him. But you just worry that he sooner or later he's going to drop something or say something that's probably a bit too out there.
Yeah, I don't mind Mo. I think that he's entertaining, but I like him in short doses. I think he'd be a nice bloke to know, but as a commentator,
look, he's literally always at the pub around the corner. literally, I see him every Friday night at the pub.
He'll definitely have a beer with you, Paul. Don't worry about that. Your shout.
It'll be you, Brayshaw, Raja. It's getting better.
It's growing.
But one thing about Matthews is that he does bring to the commentary, unlike some commentators that seem to be over the game, Matthews just has this passion for cricket that is unstoppable.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
yeah.
He's been playing and coaching and commentating for years and years and years, and his enthusiasm is undiminished. So I think big tick for Greg Matthews.
It's an excellent point. No one is forced to like cricket, but I think if you're going to be a commentator, you must have a natural enthusiasm for it. And I find it irritating when ex-players are doing it only for the money, and then the minute they're not being paid, they don't watch a ball.
Now let's move on to Harsha Bogle. Well, it's a very Indian flavour this week. We've got two and a half Indians, if you count Gav. Harsha has grown on me, I have to say. He did come across a little bit early as just being too pro-Indian, but actually, as he's developed and matured, and you listen to him on the ABC radio, I'm going to say I like Harsha Bogle.
I've always liked Harsha Bogle. I think he's an excellent commentator, and I suppose the only criticism is that I remember when Ian Chappell rejected the offer of the BCCI commentating because he revealed details of the contract that he'd been obliged to sign, which was going to forbid him from saying all sorts of critical things. And it became apparent that Harsha Bogle had signed that contract, obviously. And then you hear his commentary and you realise that he's not saying things that he probably would want to say. I remember when the Pune IPL side was named as the Rising Pune Super Giants. And on Twitter, Harsha just sent out a tweet saying, what does everyone think of this? And all the replies were, this is stupid, this is stupid, this is stupid. And Harsha sort of never took it any further because he didn't want to offend his kind of employers. I understand, I'd do the same thing, but it's hard to... you lose a little bit of respect for him. And then the ironic thing is, as you said, as the notes here say, man, is he got sacked before this year's IPL. So he obviously wasn't towing the party line enough.
Man, I'm stunned by your critique of Harsha. I always had Harsha pegged as a bit of the Mark Nicholas of... subcontinental coverage. You don't think that's the case?
Not at all. I think Harsh is very human. That's what I like about Harsh.
Okay.
He brings his personality to the commentary box more than some of the other guys. And I guess the fact that he's not an ex-cricketer, he's kind of endearing. Yeah, I like him.
Yeah, I just think, like Paul said, that I know, you know, if you're being paid, I just find when it's not disclosed and when you're towing the party line, it's just it's a bit...
Yeah, it's murky, I have to say. There is some murkiness with all these Indian
commentators. But I'd be eager to say that I'm, you know, if the BCCI want to employ me, I will say whatever you want.
Paul will sign anything.
You won't even look at the contract.
Let's round out this commentator critique with one of the most divisive figures in international cricket. And when I was thinking about this character, I actually realised that he's a very good commentator to listen to because he gives his opinions and he's not afraid of the repercussions. I'm talking, of course, about the famous Yorkshire opening batsman, Jeff Boycott. He literally does not give a toss what people think, and that's very refreshing in this day and age. What do you guys think of Jeff Boycott?
I mean, I've only heard him relatively infrequently, and maybe that's the reason I like his commentary so much, because I find his accent endearing and I find the fact that he's opinionated, but not he's not as cantankerous as you might think. He does dish out praise as well, and I just find him interesting in a way that you know, he's the opposite of someone like Mike Hussey to me, in that Hussey, boring, breathless insights that give nothing away. Boycott to me, very, very listenable too. What are you guys, you're nodding or smiling as if you're disagreeing with me?
Oh no, just Hussey cops a serve.
That's what I was saying.
Throw Hussey under the bus.
Yeah.
But what do you think of Boycott, Macca?
Boycott, mate, I just find him grizzly, and I find that he's got an agenda again. I don't know. I think he seems to always have an axe to grind to me. I don't know if I'm reading too much into it. He's obviously got a bit of
personality disorder?
Well, yeah, I just find him a bit too negative for me. There's a skeleton or two in his closet. I don't know. I'm not a massive, massive fan.
I think if you suddenly said to me, right, two teams that you don't care about are playing a game of cricket and you've got to watch it, who would you like to commentate? I think he'd be one of the first I'd choose because I think he'd make it entertaining for me. But I get your point as well.
Well, listeners, that was the commentator critique segment this week. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm still waiting to hear back from the listeners. I've got a few comments, but I would like to hear more feedback about these commentators. Someone's agreed with us about our negative assessment of Botham during the week, an English listener. But yeah, send us some comments. Matter of fact, and just include the person we're critiquing in the tweet. Just tag them into it so we can get some reaction from them. Now, let's move on now, listeners. And if you're an Australian listener, I want to reassure you that this segment comes with a warning. We're going to be talking about the Test Series versus Sri Lanka one more time because Paul and Macca weren't here for our roundup of the series. But after this, we will try not to mention the 3-0 drubbing too often.
And Menas has been talking rather frequently about this Test Series with his therapist.
And we've also got a new segment included in this, and it's called Read and React segment, where I'm going to pick an interesting article and we're going to talk about it. But this week's article is from none other than the Australian captain, Steve Smith, that he's released on foxsports.com.au. And it's interesting to get a look into the mind of the Australian captain. But Macca, you're a professional journalist. Would Steve Smith have a ghostwriter for this stuff?
Oh, he definitely would, for sure.
So would he write down like a rough outline of what he wants to say and they would edit it and put it together? Or how much of this are going to be his words, do we think?
Look, mate, I've done work as a ghostwriter in the past for columns, and it depends on sort of the who's involved. But I'd probably say in Smith's case, he might have an idea about what he wants to say, and then he might write it. He would write it down in an email form and they would sharpen it up, make it more readable, you know, make it more engaging at the lead, that kind of thing. And if they weren't doing that, Smith would talk to the writer and, they would talk about what they're going to write about, and then the writer would write that down. But I'd probably say, I mean, knowing what the type of guy Smith is probably like, I'd imagine he probably writes it in, but it would be sharpened up. I mean, he's obviously a professional cricketer, not a professional writer.
So essentially, it's his thoughts.
It is, yeah. Someone's just sort of helped him with it, yeah.
Well, let's get into his article that he wrote. Now, firstly, I've got a quote here. Looking back, there are several shots I regret playing. I regret playing a cut shot and getting bowled by Harath twice. And what's interesting, he said from that he needs to play straighter next time we go to the subcontinent. And I mean, that's so obvious. Some of those, he just could not pick up Harath's length at all. And then later on in the article, which was really interesting, Smith led us in to the dressing room where he and Harath had a really long discussion after the test series. And there's two things that come out of that. Firstly, Smith said it's very rare for him and opponents to have such an open discussion in the dressing room like that. So that's good to see. It got a bit testy at the end there, but it seemed like they were all, you know, happy cricketers at the end.
Yeah, it is good to see. And he also made the point, I think, that he thought that Harath was being so open because he probably figured that he'd be retired the next time that the Australians visited. On that, I think we had Murali as a consultant ahead of this series. Harath would be a great one to get on board to teach us how to play against his type of spin and teach our bowlers to mimic it a bit more.
Well, in the article, Smith talks about the arm slot of Harath, so a higher or lower arm, which varies the trajectory and the angle of the ball and changes the way the ball spins. So I wonder if now, going forward, Smith has to watch the arm slot. So that's where the ball's released, whether it's high or low or somewhere in between. Stephen O'Keefe talked about that, varying his arm slot coming into this series, and Smith obviously has to watch that one going to India.
I think Smith will go to India and should do well, because aside from those couple of real lapses in concentration where he played terrible shots against Harath, he played pretty well. He averaged 41 in the series. That's not far away from being a very good series. Had he just curbed those few brain explosions, he may well have gone on and had a very dominant series.
You think he's got that unorthodox technique, you know, forcing the ball onto through the leg side that could really work on those turning pitches, couldn't he, as well? I mean, as I just want to say, I thought that was such a wonderfully candid and interesting article that Smith wrote. If you go back to some of the other stuff that Michael Clark used to write, it just wasn't worth reading, you know, and maybe that's just, I don't know why, but I just found that a fascinating, you know, refreshing insight. And also, when he talked about Harath, which side he put the ball on when there was a breeze to get drift, I thought just a great little insight for the fans.
Yeah, he also noted, Smith, which was really interesting, that the one thing he's learnt from this tour, that on the subcontinent, if you get an opportunity in a test match, you have to take it. So in the first test, we had a really good opportunity to get a big lead. We didn't take it. In the last test, we had Sri Lanka 5 for 26, and we weren't able to take those opportunities. Whereas in Australia, in our conditions, Australia might be able to work themselves back into a game, not on the subcontinent. I just wanted to end Smith's article with this quote, because I think it sums up the sort of, I guess, the exasperation in the Australian camp after this loss. He said, "I'd say we have to go back to the drawing board, but that's what we said after all our series in Asia recently." So,
well, man, is that drawing? They should be back at that drawing board now, shouldn't they, Paul? I mean, you know, India's not that far away, and they should be planning for it now. They should be working out if Sean Marsh is going to go, if they're going to get a few guys that might play better in those conditions. What spinners are going to go? They should be planning that today, shouldn't they?
Well, I think they are, aren't they?
I think they probably are, more so than they ever have before. And I think that that's one of the good things that's come out of this series. I think that in the past, there was a sense that Australia would go to Asia and lose and say, oh, well, that was a pity. Let's go and dominate. We've now got the attitude that enough is enough. Things have to change. And although this series was a debacle, you still can take the positives out of it, that I think by having a specialist Sri Lankan spinner advising us, by sending some of the players over there a bit earlier to get some extra practice, by getting a wicket in Brisbane that mimics subcontinental conditions, those are all things that are steps in the right direction, and they shouldn't be derailed just because we had an unsuccessful tour. And you can allow yourself to look at it in a what-if sort of way to make you feel good about it. We did lose the toss and bowl three times on pitches over there, and we did have situations where we looked like we were going to dominate the game and they didn't occur. Had a few of those things occurred differently, it may have panned out better. So that can indicate we're not maybe as far away from success in the subcontinent as we feel.
Yeah, it's nice to hear, Paul, a bit of positivity on the show.
No, I do agree, because I think, you know, if you look back now and go, oh, of course we're going to fail at 3-0, but when you look back ahead of the series, the planning, you know, having Burns over there in India playing, but I think obviously we've pointed out before that why did Holland, why was he spirited over it? That just shows a complete lack of planning for me.
Yeah, I think that there were many mistakes that we've made, but at least we did some things right. And the other thing was losing O'Keefe to injury, I think, was a big thing as well.
Sure, at a crucial stage in that first test.
And look, with our predictions for this series and the way it's gone completely opposite to the way we thought, maybe to be 2 or 3 nil Australia, I think it was a common thought in the cricket world that Australia would dominate the series, and it just didn't happen, and we've cited the reasons why. And I've just got some stats here I want to read out. This is the horror role of Australian batsmen on this tour. David Warner averaged 27. Adam Voges.
Let me just stop. Who picked Warner for most runs for the series, Menes? Do we need to go back over that tape?
Oh, well, it was second most runs. It's not too bad. I mean, I wasn't too far behind. Yeah, well, that was worse. So Adam Voges averaged 19.67, which Paul
will make
thrilled
Paul
about.
Ecstatic. Yeah.
Now, what is he averaging? 72 at
72,
level?
Yeah.
And what, by the end of the summer, it'll be back down to about 40?
As long as he's under 60, I'd be happy for him to get to 60 and just stay there.
He looks horribly out of form. Or not out of form, out of his depth on those wickets. He just wasn't playing the line of the ball, just stepping down the wicket and getting hit on the pad.
Yeah, he played okay in the first test, but then gradually as the series went on, he became a deer in the headlights.
It happened again, the same thing in England last year on the Ashes tour. He might be one of those players that can cash in when the conditions favour him, which would make sense because he's experienced and knows the value of cashing in. But when things get a bit tough, he's a little bit out of his depth. So Adam Dombradman Voges came down to earth with a crashing thud. As we talked about, Ujjwal Khawaja averaged 13.75, my most disappointing player of the test series with the bat. And then Joey Burns averaged 8.5 and Peter Neville 8.5. So absolute horror show. And it does open the door for these specialists in the subcontinent. Mitchell Starc was far and away our best bowler. He took 24 wickets for the series. And to give you an idea of how dominant he was, all the other quicks from both teams combined took 13 wickets. And Starc took 24. So amazing stuff from Starc. Mac, any lasting thoughts on this test series?
Well, what did I say about Montgomery before the test series? I just don't know if Burns has it as a top order player. I don't know. I'm not sure that he'll be back. What do you think?
Well, I think it's a really interesting question because you've had Sean Marsh. He was picked in Hobart. He made 180. Picked in this test, he made 130. You can't leave him out again after making 100. So someone has to miss out in the next test at the WACA. Now, will it be Khawaja or Burns? Because you would think Marsh will stick in the top three. But then we go back to the old problem. Marsh is a good one at nicking off early on. So maybe do we just axe Marsh and bring him back for the Indian tour?
I just think Marsh is obviously a confidence player. And if the team shows confidence in him and said, mate, you're going to be here for the next 10 tests, he might repay that faith.
Or is he just a good player in the conditions we saw in Sri Lanka? Is that, and you know, Hobart's the same, slow and low. Maybe we're going to really go to this radical horses for courses and he'll be the first victim.
Well, it's an unusual situation where we're going to have the next 6 test matches in conditions completely opposite to these ones and completely opposite to the conditions that we're then going to face. And in the past, we've always just, you know, as a batsman, you're in the side until you're kind of, you've done enough to get out of it. And maybe now is the time, especially in this upcoming few months, to think differently to that. If Sean Marsh isn't the right player for the Australian series, but is the right player for the Indian series, tell him that right from the start and say to him, spend the next few months going to the Brisbane wicket and absolutely getting your Indian form as good as can be. Having said all that, it will be hard to drop him.
Do you think this is just another evolution of, obviously we have players for T20, we have a different team for T20, we have a different team for ODI. Now do you think this is sort of an evolution of that we'll have a different test team from time to time?
It can't be any other way now because of our results and because you don't get a lot of time to adapt to the conditions. You just pick players that are natural, you know, sweepers and can play spinners, and maybe someone like Matty Wade will come in and keep in India next year just because he's a better bat down the order. I mean, it just, it's food for thought.
I think it's very interesting they batted him at number 4. I think they must be thinking along those lines.
Is he a number 4 batsman, though?
No, I think that they were giving him an opportunity to get some performance, get some runs under the board in those conditions with a view to maybe replacing Neville in the Indian series.
I just can't help think back to Gotham Gambier's quote from a few summers ago after we whipped them 4-0, and he said something like, who cares, when you get to India, we'll beat you 4-0. maybe those days are over.
So we could be toasting 13 losses in a row on the subcontinent, unless Australia can reverse this decline.
Are you toasting? You've just accepted that we just can't do it now.
Maybe. Now let's move on from the Test series. I think everyone's pretty sick of talking about how bad Australia are in the subcontinent.
Just one last thing, that Sri Lanka were fantastic. And I think that that's the other thing that we can take some comfort from. It wasn't as though they only beat us because we couldn't handle spin. They beat us because they're pretty good. They had, Mendes played particularly well, De Silva.
Chandimal in that last test.
He played.
Actually, one thing that was evident for me in that last test, when Sri Lanka were 26 for 5, they ended the day 5 for 214. So it was a really tough day's test cricket. And I think Australia needed some of those days earlier in the series. Guts it out. Take your time. Soak up some balls. And yeah, fair play to the Sri Lankans. And that Mendes, Kushal Mendes, is one of the most exciting batsmen to come onto the scene.
I think that if Sri Lanka were coming to tour here this summer, they're obviously much more difficult on Australian conditions, but they'd give a good account of themselves relative to Sri Lankan teams in the past.
Yeah, I don't think so. We'd probably win 3 or 4 nil again. Well, let's move on now to a sledging quiz game, the sledging segment. It's been a popular game in the panel last week, and we had Pat with a big victory over Bob. He won easily. And guys, before we get into the sledging game, I've got a couple of questions. What do we think? I've been getting a lot of feedback that Bob is the most popular panelist on the Australian Cricket Podcast. Now, what do we think of a Kiwi muscling in on the Australian Cricket Podcast? Oh,
Menace, who's giving that feedback? His family?
No, listeners. Listen, I get messages. You know, quite often they say he's measured, he's good to listen to. What's going on with that?
Well,
speechless?
Not at all.
He said his favourite panellist was Gav. So the sledging's just going rife in the podcast.
No, I think he's one of the best.
But he didn't know his sledging, though. I didn't think he was none from three in the sledging game. So listeners, the way the sledging game works is, I'm going to start with Macca. I'm going to read a sledge out to Macca.
I'll be interested to see how this goes, mate.
He's going to have to identify the sledge or who said the sledge. If he cannot, Paul has a chance to steal the point. Are you ready, Macca?
Yep.
Question one. Greg Thomas to a batsman in a county game after a play and miss. It's round, red, and weighs 5 ounces. The next ball, the batsman hits it for 6 and says, "You know what it looks like. Now go fetch it." Did you know who said that one?
I do know this one. So it's Sir Isaac Vivian Alexander Richards.
Yes.
Well, you've already done better than Bob.
So well okay, there you go.
Question two. This is for you, Paul. Now, you get a double. You get 2 points up for grabs in this one. And if there are any kids listening, I'm going to drop in a swear word now. So, parents, you might want to just turn it down for about 15 seconds. Now, a point for identifying each party in this exchange during 1991 Ashes Tour Down Under. Aussie to Pom, "You're a fucking cheat." Pom to Aussie, "When in Rome, dear boy." Which two cricketers were involved in that stoush?
That's a good one. I've got no idea. When in Rome, I'll say that David Gower was the Englishman.
Bum bum.
Oh, well, I'll say that the Australian was Merv Hughes.
No, it was Ian Healy to Mike Atherton.
Oh.
Excellent retort from Atherton, though. Mackie, you're up. Next one. Oh, this is a good one. Another English. An English batsman comes to the crease. Steve Waugh tells Ricky Ponting to field right in close under his nose. Ian Healy chips in. That could be anywhere within a 3-mile radius. Which English captain were they talking about?
I think it's got to be Nasser Hussain, doesn't
correct,
it?
Correct, Macca. All right, you two from two.
That's some of Ponting's best, wasn't it?
That was a good one. It was Healy. Question four. Which legendary Aussie fast bowler used this sledge on various batsmen? "Hey, mate, I know why you're batting so badly. You've got some shit on the end of your bat." When the batsman then examines the end of the bat, the bowler goes, "Nah, wrong end, mate." Who used to use that sledge for a point?
God.
Great Australian fast bowler.
I don't even understand the sledge.
He's saying that the shit's at the other end, like the shit's holding the bat.
Oh, the okay. Shit.
Very complicated sledge.
Well, I haven't heard of it, so I think it has to be someone, let's say, I don't know, Tomo.
That would have been my guess, too.
I didn't give you a chance to steal the last one. Mackie, do you want to steal
this
point?
No, you didn't. And I've got to say, that would have been my bet, Tommy. But why don't I go Lenny Pascoe?
Close, but it was Dennis Lilly.
Oh. I didn't think you'd need to do that.
Yeah, no, that's a bit... Yeah.
Now, another one, Macca. For a point, when an Aussie fast bowler said this to Robin Smith, tell me which Aussie said it. Mate, if you just turn the bat over, you'll find the instructions on the other side.
I think it's got to be Terry Alderman, doesn't it?
Right era, wrong bowler. Do you want to steal this one, Paul?
Again, my inclination. Well, right era. 89. I'm going to say Merv Hughes.
Well done. He's on the off the mark with a single. Finally. Look at that. He gets a point.
Remember that series. Robert Smith couldn't hit it off the square.
I thought he runs against the quicks, just not against the spinners.
Now, finally, we're going to end it with Paul. You've got a chance. There's 2 points on offer here, so you've got a chance to steal this game, Paul. 2 points if you can name both parties in this sledge. Bowler, I've been waiting 2 years for another chance at you. Batsman, looks like you spent it eating.
I know this one, but I can't think of what it was. But from Macca's laugh, knowing laugh, I think he's going to get it if I don't. Bowler, I've spent 2 years. Looks like he's spent it eating. Batsman, so it's the Australian bowler? And do we know what country the batsman's from?
Not telling you that.
Okay.
You'll give it away.
I should know this. I do know this.
Counting down.
All right.
Give us your best guess before Macca has a chance.
Merv Hughes is the bowler?
Bum-bum.
But I just love
you
this.
You know this one,
I
don't
just
you?
Love this one because it's Shane Warne and Daryl Cullinan.
Correct.
Of course.
I just love this one because Warne's obviously, you know, come up with his swipe and Cullinan's just knocked in for six, which he couldn't obviously do with his bat. What a great retort. Like, what could Warne say about that? Because he had been spending all that time eating. Just
the only way,
great Warne, stuff.
Warne was only able to get him back by getting him out the next 14 times.
Well, Paul, 0 points, 4 points for Macca.
I thought I got one, didn't I?
Did he get one? I don't think you did.
Yeah, you got the Merv Hughes.
Oh, yeah, you got one. So 4-1 to Macca. Big win for Macca. So you've won one sledging game.
I think I'm a fan of sledging and Paul doesn't like the
dark.
Well,
no, when we played the
so
game,
much.
we replayed the sledging game from last week. Paul knew all of them. Oh, so
as a sledge would be, mate, it's easy to get runs of the nets.
Now, listeners, if you want to get in touch with the Australian Cricket Podcast, we're on Gmail, auscricketpod@gmail.com. We're also on Twitter @AusCricketPod. We're on Facebook as the Australian Cricket Podcast. If you can take the time and subscribe to the show on any podcast app or especially iTunes, and then please review the show. It's great to get some feedback. I think Peter left a lovely review, said the show was very interesting and engaging and sometimes quite funny. So obviously that's when Bob's on. But it was nice to hear that sort of feedback. So if you can, review the show, rate the show, it'd be great. Now, we're going to take a little break, and because it's the three-year anniversary and I love a good sledge, I've got some little stump mic sounds from some sledging out in the middle. So I've got Aaron Finch sledging Glenn Maxwell, and then I've got Kumar Sangakkara sledging Sean Pollock. Have a listen to this, and then we'll be right back with some great listener mail.
Slippery pole, Maxi. Number six. Next one down to the team.
Decent sledge. Oh, Maxwell's got a reverse sweep. I'm not sure Finch will have much to say about that.
Number three to number six, then out of the team. That's how it goes. You know how it works.
Gee, he looked serious, didn't he? Oh, no, he's dived it down his throat. He's gone. Yeah!
Oh, it's lots of pressure here for the skippy, eh? Gonna let his whole country down now if he fails. Oh, lots of expectations, fellas. Come on. Oh man, the weight of all these expectations, fellas. The weight of the country, chaps. 42 million supporters right here, depending on Sean.
Welcome back to the Australian Cricket Podcast. That was some classic sledgy, Finchie on Maxi and Sangakkara on Pollock. Great to hear some sledging out in the middle. This is the three-year anniversary edition of the show. And Macca, you've got your Australian Cricket Podcast shirt on. Thank you to Matt from Tassie Uniforms for donating them.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Proudly wearing it.
Yeah, you stopped donating shirts, Paul, which is why you don't have one. After the panel increased exponentially, there are only three panelists, so it was three shirts, but now there's far too many. Now, we've got some great listener mail. I put out a call for some more listener mail and some really interesting stuff here. Now, Dylan Tucker, who's our correspondent in London, he had an interesting idea, and this is to do with the two-tier test system, and I'll read his idea. What if we scrap T20, ODI, and test rankings and simply have one international ranking table which is decided on points from every series between full member nations, which are, in effect, super series? Countries may earn 5 points for a test, 3 points for a one-day international and one for a T20 win, and all the points go to one rankings. This doesn't solve some of the issues that a two-tier test does, but it does go further than a test championship by immediately giving every match context, making the rankings simple and still prioritise test cricket. Guys, what do we think?
Man, I'm still a massive, massive, massive fan of the test championship. I hope one day it comes to fruition, but the problem I have with that sort of point scoring system, I'll probably have a test would be worth 20 points and a one-day international would be worth 1 point.
But what do we think of the concept of a table encapsulating all the different forms of the game? And then, you know, you wouldn't have this argument, who's the best cricket nation in the world? It would be there.
I mean, I like the idea in the sense that if you were new to cricket, it would make sense. It's very strange that we've got so many different rankings and lots of different things. This would cut through that and make it simple. I think it would just be very hard to do because the idea of having 5, 3, and 1, that can't really work because at the moment they have to weight everything in accordance to the fact that some sides are playing more games and some sides are playing fewer. Some sides are playing games against nations of higher rankings and lower rankings. The actual test cricket ranking is quite complicated the way it works. They'd have to come up with something fairly equally as complex and it might just become too difficult. But in principle, I think it's a good idea.
Well, good email, Dylan. Thank you very much for that. Now I've got an email from Steve Cullen, and this is a very good email, very cutting. He's got straight to the point here. Could someone please explain to me the virtue of our ludicrous obsession with all-rounders? I'm aware that the coach has been influential in implementing this policy of never going into a test with just four bowlers, but I'm still waiting to see where this is a benefit. What I can see is that we went into our last test with three guys in our top seven who averaged in the low 20s. Outside of the World Series days, this haven't happened before in my memory. Can we really be surprised to find that we struggle to score heavily in challenging situations? And just to end this one, in other news, it's great to have Kiwi Bob back. Thanks, Steve.
Manners, I agree 100% with this email. I why do we have an obsession with all-rounders? I really don't understand. If it's a batting all-rounder, perhaps back in the day of the Steve Waugh mould, where he can genuinely hold his position in the side at number six and chime in with a vital wicket here and there. But I like he says, it just puts so much pressure on the top order to score. Or if there's a collapse, it becomes... It's dominoes throughout the whole order.
Yeah, I think it's a strange one that they're kind of saying we need an Ian Botham, therefore we'll pick someone and hope that he turns into Ian Botham. And that just is unlikely to happen. The only thing I'll say about Mitchell Marsh is that he does show promise. His record as a bowler in first class cricket's pretty good. He's got an average of 28. There's something about him that could blossom. And you look back at Steve Waugh, his early test career was pretty ordinary. They're kind of hoping he's going to replicate that. But there must come a point where you've got to say, no, let's just pick a specialist batsman. As we're going in with Extra in this last test match, I think they were just panicking. They had Enrique over there. They had no one else to turn to. Yeah, I agree. I think that a batting all-rounder is preferable. And that's where I think that someone like Steve Smith and Voges and Warner should be encouraged to practice their bowling more. And that way, if you need a few overs from a part-timer, you're going to get some more quality.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of key points for me from this. Firstly, I think Lehman is paying some kind of respect to the success England have had with five bowlers. They go to every test at the moment with an all-rounder, you know, whether it's Wokes or Stokes. So that gives them that fifth bowling option. Then we had Jacques Carlos for South Africa. And so I think Lehman likes that flexibility of having someone to come on and bowl some medium pace. And then if you want to go with two spinners, you can have three quicks and two spinners. But I guess back to your point, which is really strange, it always used to be that in our top six, there was someone that could bowl a few overs. You know, you had the Waugh brothers, you had Blewett, you even had Hayden at times, you had Ponting.
Border.
Yeah, they would all bowl a few medium paces. And I think now, do you think with all the cricket and all the money involved, players, batsmen don't want to risk that kind of injury by bowling? And they, you know, we saw what happened to Watson. And do you think maybe they just don't want to bowl?
I think Steve Smith is obviously of the Alan Border vein, that he is reluctant to bowl himself. He obviously, you know, made his test debut primarily as a bowling all-rounder, didn't he? I think, but you can understand he wants to primarily concentrate on his batting, and he's also got a heavy load with the captaincy. But I think, you know, Paul, you speak about Steve Waugh, and obviously that's a great example, and you know, maybe Mitchell Marsh can come through like Steve Waugh did, but I guess for every Steve Waugh, there's probably another 20 guys that sort of fell by the wayside. I guess Blewett is kind of one of those, isn't he? You know, I don't know how long you persist with someone, especially when we're losing games.
Yeah, I agree.
And finally, I've got one more email. Now, this is probably the most niche email I've ever had. And I want to give a special applause for Hugh Rigney. I just want to applaud his passion, because he's given me a page and a half of passionate discourse on the Australia A team selection. This is the sort of thing Gav would be going crazy about. This is cricket nut heaven. I mean, there's stats here. I've never heard someone so passionate about who's been left out of the Australia A team. Now, I'm not going to go into it, and maybe Gav and I will talk about what he saw up in the Australia A games. But just thank you for your email, Hugh. I had a good read of it, and some great points there, but can't get too upset about Australia A selections.
Well, it's a good email. I think he makes some great points here. You get guys like Maddison. How far are they away from sort of being a permanent part of the Australian, one of Australia's sides, and some other guys, you know, like Boyce, who are obviously on the fringe as well.
I just think the difference between Australia A selections and Australia selections is you might not pick Australia A selections on their previous results. You are, by virtue, picking on potential.
You are.
It's a development side. So someone might have had a poor Shield season last year or Matador Cup, but you're picking them for the future. Whereas when it comes to picking teams for Australia, the main side, you're not picking for, you know, developing a player.
Yeah, and I agree with that. That Hugh's point is that by looking at the Matador Cup that just recently went by, there'd be several players who didn't perform in that who yet have been picked for Australia A in this current one day four way series that they're having. I would like to see Hugh's point applied to the Test side, that there's too much credence given to intuition and we've backed a bloke for these reasons over cold hard numbers in picking the Australian Test side. I'm not saying that numbers are the only things, but I would like something like when the Australian Test side is announced, for them to have alongside it what a computer would have picked just on stats, and for each of the ones that they've gone differently to actually explain why. So to give their to give some credence to statistics. And
you want Rod Marsh to try and explain what goes on in his head and well, the selectors?
I'm worried here, because I agree with Paul 100% here. And we all know about the Moneyball
so
example.
You want a robot picking the teams? We all know about the Moneyball. Robot umpires, robot selectors.
Well, mate, you're a massive Red Sox fan. Moneyball bought the Red Sox, you know, World Series glory. I think there's a great lot of credence in that in terms of just purely working on the stats. And, you know, you can apply that to subcontinental conditions. Who bats the best against spin? Who's got the best average? I think that could really, really work.
For example, someone like David Hussey, who never got a go at test level, yet consistently was averaging in the mid-50s and could bowl a bit as well and was an excellent fieldsman. I'm sure there would have been times where if the computer had spat out the test team in, you know, 2009 or 10 or 11, David Hussey's name would have been there. I'm not saying they had to pick him, but I would have liked to force the selectors to consider him and actually say why they'd chosen not to pick him.
I think just generally, not just on David Hussey, but I think some of it comes down to the gap between first-class cricket and test cricket, and the sort of intuition needed to find out which players are going to make that leap and have the technique to be armed at test level. But I agree, stats are important. We have seen, though, the selectors pick some players on the back of stats. Adam Vogue just got his run when he really didn't look like playing a test match on the back of some stellar Shield form. We have Chad Sayers went on the New Zealand tour, bit of a nobody, but took a lot of Shield wickets. Not a nobody, but, you know, not a well-known name. Yeah.
But, for example, Fawad Ahmed not getting picked in this current series is because they have a belief that he just can't cut it at the international level. They instead, when O'Keefe got injured, picked John Holland, whose statistics are vastly inferior to Ahmed and who performed at a very mediocre level over there. I think Ahmed should have been picked on the basis of statistics. And
actually, someone made a good point. I can't remember where I heard it, but we had a great opportunity in that last test in Sri Lanka to play someone like Fawad Ahmed and see what they could do in these conditions.
There was nothing to lose, was there?
Absolutely.
In preparation for the Indian tour, just maybe get that first match nerves out of the way. And we didn't have that opportunity. So I think we've learnt a lot from this tour.
Well, Mez, I want to turn that argument on its head and say, when was the last time that a hunch selection proved to be the right one? When did someone make a real hunch, make a real, you know, selection gamble, and it paid off? For me, one doesn't come immediately to mind.
Ashton Agar's 98 in his test debut, batting at 11.
Well, it's still, where is he now?
Yeah.
Well, the same ones who made that Ashton Agar one dropped Phil Hughes after he'd scored 85 not out in that first test and got a dodgy decision in the second and never played again. That, you're right. When is the last time a hunch has not only paid off, but has then gone on to be an absolute top-level performer? Someone like Steve Waugh, probably, that was picked probably earlier than he should have, but it's a long time ago.
And I think that's the problem, that you that seems to infect perhaps some of our selection, that they have this, you know, you've got your long-term plan, you're thinking long-term, and these are the guys we have. But then they make these silly long-term selections or decisions, like with Holland, that just don't make sense.
You make silly short-term
Short-term. Yeah. You've got the long-term plan, but then you make these silly short-term decisions that just disrupt everything else. I mean, to say Holland should be there just because he's a left-armer means, well, if you're bowling left-arm in the garage, well, you're a champ.
Well, that's, and I think that quote alone is an indictment on Rod Marsh, that he said we chose to replace O'Keefe with Holland because he was a similar left-arm orthodox, which is to say that if Shane Warne was bumping around, they wouldn't have picked him. Mm. That's just a crazy thing to say.
Well, that was some great listener mail from Hughes, sparked some interesting discussion, and maybe I'm inspired to start an Australia A podcast, the Australia A
cricket
podcast.
It should all be part of the mix, mate.
It will be for this summer. Gav's been up there. He'll be back soon to talk about it. Before we go, there was some big news in the BBL yesterday. Stuart Fraud, is coming out to play in the Big Bash next summer. Macca, I know you're excited.
Well, Menace, I guess you won't be welcoming him at Hobart Airport then. I just think...
Why is he signed for the Hurricanes, though? Well, has he been to Tasmania? Well, sorry, Matt.
It's similar. Thanks for the shirts. It's obviously similar to English conditions, so you can imagine he's going to go pretty well down there. And what a great boon for the BBL, which is just going to grow and grow and grow again next summer.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely agree. Fantastic. Next job is to try to entice some Indians to break their own boards rules and come out here for the BBL.
Menace, can we get anyone? Have we got someone for the Sixers?
We can get that Johan Botha back, can't we? I know you're a big fan of him.
I thought John Holland was rumoured that he might be coming to the Sixers.
I'm going to end this podcast now. Well, guys, Macca, Paul, thanks so much for coming in for the three-year anniversary.
What a fantastic 3 years. Thanks, guys.
Thanks to all the listeners for the many, many thousands and thousands of downloads and listens and messages of support over the last 3 years. We love talking about cricket. Wherever you are in the world, you enjoy the podcast. And just a quick note that I made an appearance on the Wind in the Willow podcast, actually, the Willow in the Windies podcast, which is a Caribbean podcast. I was talking about the CPL. So I actually didn't end up wrapping up the CPL, but go to the Willow in the Windies, download it, or I'm going to release a remastered version of that audio, that show I did with David Oram later in the week. So hang out for that one. There's a full CPL wrap in that one. And again, Macca and Paul, thanks, guys. Enjoy the rest of the one-day series.
Thanks, Menace.
Thanks, Menace.
Don't worry about Bob being the most popular. Thanks, listeners, and we'll be back next Monday.
What a marvellous stroke. He's played no better shot than that in the whole of the series.